We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Wednesday, March 12th, and last night the Trump administration fired more than 1,000 workers at the Department of Education. This coming from the New York Times morning cut, and they are basically freaking out this morning, and it's quite hilarious to see. So it's not gone, but Congress can abolish it at the cabinet level. Because it is a congressionally established agency. And I actually wrote a piece in American Family News talking about that, how Trump wants to abolish the Department of Education, but it might be a little more complicated than you think. So you can always read that and all of my Friday columns. Generally, they come out on Friday at American Family News. And so Trump wants to use the department to crack down on schools and colleges with DEI efforts. He opposes, according to the New York Times. But really, the argument, of course, is that education belongs as a subject matter to the states. And so Linda McMahon, who is the Education Department Secretary, has actually said that the department will be unwound or will be disbanded on their watch, and hopefully they will accomplish that. Meanwhile, the House has passed the CR bill funding the government for 6 more months. This was not really controversial among Republicans, but it became a controversy when Thomas Massie of Kentucky, the representative, was the only Republican that did not back the legislation, and that sparked a big debate online about Thomas Massie, because then, of course, Trump posted a kind of rant against him on his Truth Social, saying that he will be primaried. And I was actually very encouraged to see a groundswell of support for Thomas Massie. And full disclosure, I've known Massie personally for over a decade. I actually was once in consideration, almost became his communications director on the Hill. Went a different way with my job, and that was okay. But definitely have, you know, stayed in touch, and I really respect him. We've had him on this program a lot, and the bottom line is you should be able, as a representative or anybody, frankly, but especially someone in elected office, to disagree with a Trump administration agenda point and not just automatically be called a rhino or have Trump threaten to primary you. If Trump is going to primary anybody, it should be the actual rhinos in Congress and the Senate. And I would be all for that. Go after somebody like the Lindsey Grahams of the world, or you know, some of these others, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski's. I mean, these are the true problems in Congress. The problem that is the perceived problem among the MAGA base overall with Thomas Massie is that he is too principled and maybe a little too idealistic. And so he won't vote for something unless he actually supports it. And so a lot of the commentary was, well, what has he done in Congress? He hasn't sponsored one piece of legislation from himself that's been turned into law. And there were a number of conservative commentators like Jesse Kelly who rightly said, I don't want my congressman to just continue passing a bunch more laws. The whole point of the Trump mandate is to get rid of the bloat, to get rid of all of these ridiculous laws and all of the federal oversight. We want fewer laws, not just more. And if you think that the point of going to Congress is just to do something, then you're entirely missing the plot. So I think that for conservatives, we need to remember that being principled matters. And whether or not you agree with Massey on this specific issue, and I actually tend to understand where he's coming from, but I disagree slightly just because I think this was the best package that could be put together, even principled conservatives like Chip Roy and literally every other Republican in the House voted yes. And I think that there was a good reason for that. But I also see Massey's point that if we've had, you know, 4 years of Republicans saying, okay, let's put together a strategy and a game plan. And now they're saying, hey, we need 6 more months to, you know, figure this out and negotiate and all of this stuff. It's like, you're just going to continue to kick the can further down the road. And I spoke with Tho Bishop yesterday from the Mises Institute, and he basically said the same thing. Like, you know, this is just a dressed up PR move that is continuing with the Washington swamp continuing to do what they're doing. And so I think that Massey has a point. But the point here is that it's debatable. And it's okay that Massey is sort of the lone voice that is saying, well, wait a minute, we actually have to reduce spending, because if we are pushing out this continuing resolution that basically has all of the earmarks for everything that supposedly we've been all against, then why are we voting for it? And he wants to be principled. And then, of course, the opposition to that is saying, well, this is what Trump wants, so Trump should get whatever he wants. Well, that may be true for the executive branch and for the cabinet secretaries, but not necessarily in Congress. This is a reason we have the separation of powers. And Congress can ultimately push back a little bit and say, well, wait a minute, the mandate is to us as well. It's not just that since Trump is in the elected office, Trump gets whatever he wants. Yes, he's the leader. Yes, he needs to push for things like DOGE and reduction of spending. But overall, everybody should be on the same page that the goal isn't Trump gets what he wants. The goal is let's do what's best for America, ultimately. And so this funding bill, the reason that the Freedom Caucus and people like Chip Roy and others ultimately support it is because at least it is still continuing to fund things like ICE and some of these deportations that need to occur. And I'm all for that. And, you know, going to a government shutdown on Friday would have been the deadline if they hadn't passed this continuing resolution. Some of that seems like a little bit of a waste of time and just giving the Democrats on the other side of the aisle a lot more leverage, at least just in the media, to say, look, Republicans don't have it together. And honestly, maybe that's true. Maybe Republicans need to get it together a little bit more. And that's the one beef that I have, is why do you need a continuing resolution for only 6 months to put together this package? This should have been as easy as Trump day one signing executive orders and having those already prepared. So it seems like Congress wasn't quite prepared to do this, but the underlying reason for that, I think, is because ultimately, while Congress and the Republicans in Congress, at least, are talking a big game about reducing spending, they're not ultimately wanting to reduce spending when it comes to their projects and the things where they have to look and actually make the cuts. So, you know, this would be like saying, all right, so for our household, we need to actually reduce our budget. We're spending too much. But then when you actually go line item by line item and you're going, well, I don't want to cancel my subscriptions. You know, I don't want to stop shopping over here. I don't want to start spending there. And so you're saying on one hand, yeah, we got to balance our budget, but you don't actually want to stop spending on things, then that ultimately becomes a major problem. So the issue overall is that I think Republicans need to take a hard look at spending, just like they need to take a hard look while they're in Congress at things like term limits. Term limits are actually a good thing, but is Congress willing to do that for themselves? No. They passed the 22nd Amendment and put term limits on the presidency, right? But they won't ever impose that on themselves. So they need to impose the reduction of spending that they are suggesting is a very good thing and actually do the work, not just talk the talk. All right. Well, there is also a controversy going on with Steak and Shake. I don't know if you have heard about this, but the headline from the nation's restaurant news, of all things, is that Steak and Shake gets political after switching to beef tallow fries. And yesterday, RFK Jr. Actually went into a Steak and Shake with Sean Hannity, and this was kind of all over and suggesting that Steak and Shake is now MAHA because they are not using seed oils in their beef tallow fries. Some are suggesting that while they're not ultimately fried in that, that they come frozen and packaged. And so is this really getting rid of seed oils and all of that? But it seems like a lot of restaurants and other food providers are being at least encouraged to go the way of MAHA. So what can RFK Jr. really get done? Let's welcome in a raw egg nationalist who is an author and the co-founder of Kindred Harvest and has a lot of opinions on seed oils. So good morning, raw egg. Anna, what is this controversy over Steak and Shake?
It's great to be with you again, Jenna. So yeah, so there's this controversy over the oil or the fat that's being used to fry Steak and Shake fries to go with their burgers. And you know, it's been a big part of the RFK Jr. Sort of memeplex of the build up to Make America Healthy Again to RFK being appointed head of Health and Human Services, that one of the principal things that's wrong with the American food supply is processed foods, and one of the principal ingredients of processed foods is seed oils, which are novel, industrially produced fats. They've only been around for about 100 years. They're in everything now, all processed food. Fast food manufacturers, fast food chains use them to fry their fries, and they're very unhealthy. And so there's been this meme, you know, let's go back to using tallow to fry fries instead. And tallow was used until fairly recently, until about sort of 30, 40 years ago, to fry fries. Not only is it healthier, it also tastes better. And yeah, because Steak and Shake have actually decided to follow RFK Jr.'s lead and say, okay, yeah, we're going to use tallow instead of soybean oil, probably. That's what they were probably using. Then this is being interpreted as a kind of nakedly political gesture. And that's very sad, because I think that the Make America Healthy Again agenda should be nonpartisan. I mean, it should be a nonpartisan issue. Americans need to be healthier again. We need to do something about chronic health. Chronic health issues have exploded over the last century, and certainly over the last 50 years. And this is just one small thing that can be done to make the food supply better. And so it's kind of disappointing, but it's also inevitable, I think. I think there was going to be this kind of pushback. The question now is whether or not this dies right now and other fast food outlets are put off, or whether actually we get past this and this is the beginning of, well, basically a preference cascade where we start to see consumers demanding a change from seed oils to tallow, and fast food manufacturers and fast food outlets complying and actually going along, and then, you know, things start to change.
Yeah, and I hope that we do see this demand to reduce seed oils being used and actually get back to just whole ingredients. I mean, I've seen a lot of Instagram posts, and I'm speaking with Raw Egg Nationalist, who's an author and the co-founder of Kindred Harvest, and I've seen a lot of Instagram posts where it's showing the labels of food that, you know, we used to eat, like, you know, McDonald's, Gatorade, ice cream, you know, all of these kinds of things, and saying this isn't actually the same product that you used to consume, and showing the labels of the ingredients from back in like the 60s and 70s compared to where they are now. And it's not just seed oils. I mean, a lot of this is not only dyes, like, you know, Red 40, which shouldn't be used, but just a lot of overprocessed stuff that I can't even pronounce. And when it used to just be like, you know, milk, eggs, sugar, and that's about it, you know. So where will be the pressure points on some of these when you do have big lobbies and industries that have a vested interest to continue using these ingredients that ultimately aren't the healthiest?
Yes, yeah. I mean, this is the the truth about the Maha movement is that there is an enormous, enormous series of vested interests that are pushing and have pushed for ever greater addition of these kinds of novel ingredients into the food supply. So, you know, you have mountains and mountains of corn being produced in the Midwest. Corn is heavily subsidized. There are mountains of corn, and it has to go somewhere. So this isn't the overproduction of corn isn't driven by consumer demand. It's driven by the subsidy system, by government, and by corporate interest. And so what happened? Well, more and more corn has been insinuated into processed foods over the last sort of 50 to 70 years. Things like high fructose corn syrup, which is supposed to be an alternative to table sugar, was created specifically as a means of insinuating more corn into processed food. And so you've got all of these vested interests. You know, they make a lot of money out of creating new ingredients to go into processed food. So there's going to be pushback, I think, basically at every single point. Every single attempt, I think, to clean up the food supply will be met by corporate interests, because they want to maintain the whole system. They don't want to return to a system that is, you know, like the system that prevailed, let's say, up until at least the 1950s, where actually, you know, the majority of ingredients in foods were recognizable to ordinary people. They were things that people would have had in their kitchen and in their pantry, you know. But ever since the 1950s, the late 1950s, I think 1958 is a key year actually for food additives. Then you've had the addition of all of these crazy new things that nobody even really knows what they are, and they're manufactured from petroleum. You know, things like red dye 40 and all of these other dyes, they're made from petroleum products, and that's again the petroleum lobby. So I think, broadly speaking, this is where the pressure is really going to come from, is from these corporate interests that do not want the food supply to be cleaned up. They want there to be 10,000 food additives in the food supply, in the American food supply, because that's how they make their money. So RFK Jr. has a big uphill struggle ahead of him, I think.
And with those kinds of interests, rather than just the overall health of Americans, that you can see how it would be a difficult road ahead. And it's amazing, though, to me that we've even gotten this far down the line with these types of additives and preservatives and just other junk that is ultimately really bad and unhealthy. And we're seeing the consequences of that with, as RFK mentioned in his confirmation hearings, that chronic illness is prevalent in America where it wasn't when even he was growing up. I mean, we went from a vastly healthy society to a chronic illness society, I mean, in the span of not even one generation. I mean, and so clearly there is something wrong with the food supply or with something. I mean, it can't just possibly be that, you know, suddenly everybody has a bunch of allergies, chronic illness, all of this. Regular listeners know, you know, that I eat generally gluten-free because a lot of the bleach that's in the processed and overprocessed flours and stuff is something that will trigger migraines for me and, you know, other health issues. And, you know, that kind of stuff. And my doctor told me, you know, while you have a more severe reaction than the average person, it's not good for anybody to be eating, you know, bleached flours and overprocessed foods. And a lot of your GI health ultimately impacts your overall health. And this is where it can cause so many other consequences. And we're seeing that. And then ultimately we see that into our medical and healthcare system, where then it becomes overrun with all of these people that, you know, have to go, and everybody's on medication. And so then Big Pharma has an incentive probably, right? And so, you know, this has a lot of tentacles everywhere. What to you, Raw Egg, would be, you know, the greatest wins, if you could just name a couple kind of top line, that if RFK gets accomplished as sort of wide sweeping changes in the next 4 years would be major wins for the U.S. in this area?
Well, I think so we've been talking about food additives. So I think one of the major wins will have to be new licensing laws for food additives. We need to the American system needs to be reformed fundamentally and need to get serious about actually understanding what food additives do before they're released into the food supply. You know, so the current system allows manufacturers to come up with new additives and then to say, oh, yes, we've tested this additive. It's safe. It can go in our food. And the FDA is fine with that. It's called generally recognized as safe. I actually call the system generally recognized as insane. I've written about this. You know, that you let food manufacturers say, we've created novel ingredients and they're perfectly safe. And then there's no further testing. So food licensing, the additive system, that needs to be changed. There also needs to be stringent testing of the additives that are already on the market because they actually haven't been tested by anybody other than the companies that make them. So there's that, the food licensing, definitely. That will, if RFK Jr. can actually force that through, that will be huge. That will have huge implications. That will really, really help to clean up the food supply. He's talked actually about wellness camps as well. I don't know if you've heard this. He talked about this during the presidential election when he was still a presidential candidate, and he's talked about it since. You know, this idea that actually what needs to happen is that people need to be weaned off Big Pharma. People need to be weaned off their drug dependency. And one of the best ways to do that would actually be to offer people places to go where instead of just taking pills, you know, to get better, they actually have access to good food, to sunlight, to exercise. They can convalesce in you know, attractive surroundings, and they can actually nurse themselves into real health without the need for Big Pharma interventions. So I think that would be good if he could do that too. If he could create the beginnings of some sort of alternative health system that actually breaks Americans' dependency on Big Pharma, on the pill model of health. I mean, if he could do those two things, I think that would be huge. There are all sorts of other things as well. You know, the CDC actually just last week, I believe, announced that they're commissioning the first ever long-term study into the relationship between vaccines and autism. Now, that's been quite controversial. Of course, this is a controversial topic, but actually it signals, I think, a willingness now to confront controversial topics and to satisfy public demand. And there is big public demand. People want to know. So I think, yes, the wellness camps, I think the food licensing system, and also investigating these controversial topics, actually doing the kind of research that has been basically impossible so far because of vested interests, because of Big Pharma, because of Big Food, and also because of the mainstream media's attitude towards these things, dismissing them as conspiracy theories, dismissing them as, you know, far right, etc. Those three things would be amazing, I think.
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more. And I think the word here is disruption, where the Trump administration is okay with disrupting the status quo, with telling everyone, listen, don't just take for granted all of these things that, you know, have changed over the last 50 and 60 years. We need to go back and actually revisit what is in the best interests of Americans, not in the best interests of the special interests. So I really hope that RFK gets done and accomplishes at least those two things, but even more for the overall MAHA movement, and that would be amazing for overall Americans' health. So Raw Egg Nationalist, really appreciate that. You can follow him on X and also read The Eggs Benedict Option, his book, and a lot of other really great articles on these topics that he has. We will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. If we have learned anything from the 2024 election, it's how important it is for us to fight, fight, fight. We also learned how desperately the left wants to fight to take babies' lives, which is why every day Preborn Ministries fights for the babies. Preborn's network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, fighting for mothers deciding between the life and death of their child. Preborn welcomes these women with God's love and offers them a free ultrasound to introduce their precious baby and hear the beautiful heartbeat. This amazing encounter gives her baby a fighting chance, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. So would you join Preborn in the fight for life? One ultrasound is just $28, and $140 will sponsor five ultrasounds. Babies are worth fighting for.
To donate, dial #250 on your cell phone and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or you can visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating. Fight, fight, fight for the babies.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, you know, the Democrats are continuing to kind of not only freak out about the Trump mandate, but they're continuing to insult the majority of Americans who really want all of these great changes, who want to see a balanced budget, who want to see MAHA and the movement prevail, who want to see America First policies, who want to see the borders close. I mean, all of those are very mature opinions and just very common sense opinions. And yet, Senator Alyssa Slotkin went on The View of all places yesterday, saying that Americans elected President Trump because they are going through their angry teenage years and their brains haven't fully formed yet. This is Cut 5.
Right. I think there's a feeling in the country. Yeah. I mean, I always often say this, you know, we're about to turn 250 years old, mm-hmm. right? We're still pretty young yeah. for a country. These are our like our angry teenage years, right? We are going through this push and pull where we're happy, we're sad, we want this, we want that. And what do you do when you have a teenager who's threatening themselves and others? You just try to get them through this period alive so that their brain can fully form and you can come back to kind of what
are
a country.
Are you talking about Trump?
No, I'm talking about our country. We're pendulum swinging. We're pendulum swinging. And so for me, I think that this, I don't think there's a single American who feels like this is normal.
Wow. Well, let's welcome in Representative Marlon Stutzman from the great state of Indiana. And Representative, before we get to your legislation, which I definitely want to talk about, I just want your response to that, because isn't that insulting to Americans who absolutely think that, you know, what isn't normal was the last 4 years of Biden's insanity?
Absolutely. Well, great to be with you this morning, Jenna. You know, it's kind of funny because she's talking about us coming up on our 250th birthday as a country. And I've been talking about it a little differently because, you know, we have a bloated government. We have a government that has grown out of control, there's no accountability. There's no one overseeing what our federal government is spending until now with the Trump administration and the Department of Government Efficiency, the DOGE team. And I've been saying that, you know, we're coming up on 250 years, we need a colonoscopy for the federal government. So I would say that, you know, she's got a very different perspective, you know, that maybe the Democrat Party's throwing a fit because somebody found out how bad they were operating the federal government, that Americans are ticked off, and that we're fed up with them taking advantage of the American taxpayer. So if she wants to compare it to teenagers, I that's fine. But I tell you what, the American people are starting to see what's actually going on in Washington, D.C., and it's a revelation to all of us. I think we all instinctively knew that the federal government was being operated very poorly over the past several decades. And I think all the way back from the Obama administration, that's when it all started. They kept Trump on his heels with the impeachment stuff and the Russia dossier and all of those investigations, and never, you know, the Trump administration did a lot of great work in the first term, but was still not able to get in and find now what we're finding. And this, the DOGE team, I think, is doing a tremendous service to the American people. So that's why they're throwing a fit.
Yeah, so well said, and I could not agree more. I think it's that the Democrats know that they're being had, and not only the Democrats, but some of the Republicans in D.C. who have just kind of gone along with it, and we've been calling them Republicans yep. in name only. And so what's your view on the continuing resolution and this kind of controversy with Representative Thomas Massie being the lone Republican, you know, for I think a principled reason, but I tend to, as I talked yep. about in the first segment, you know, agree with the Freedom Caucus and the overall Republican position. You know, okay, this is 6 months, and, you know, we're doing a lot of good things, like keeping ICE, being able to protect the border, you know, some of these things that we need to do. But overall, I mean, you've introduced legislation to restore checks and balances in the federal government. I think that's what America wants to see. Instead of some of these like 6 month, 1 year kicking the can down the road, we want to actually see some action on balancing the budget and stopping the wasteful spending.
Yeah, you know, sometimes we just don't always understand the way God works in our lives. And I would say that that applies here with the election and the fact that President Trump lost the 2020 election. In hindsight, I think they would have just continued the same sort of chaotic movement and the treatment of President Trump if he would have won the 2020 election. Of course, we were all disappointed at the time. But now, 4 years, the Democrats had a chance to reveal who they really are. I mean, watching them on the House floor during the joint address when President Trump spoke to the nation last week shows who the Democrat Party has become. And they won't even applaud a 13-year-old African-American boy who's fighting cancer. I mean, just the fact that they behave like that should show all of us how they really, who they truly are. And so this CR is what I call it, we're cleaning up. I'm a business guy. I'm an entrepreneur. I bought companies that are struggling and needed to be turned around. And you come in and you see all the bad bills that the previous management had. And it's like, why do we have to pay these bills? But it's like, if you want to move forward, you got to just clear the deck. And this is even better than that because there's no new spending. And so we're just clearing the deck, getting rid of the old stuff. Because the Democrats never pass a budget. They like to pass these omnibuses that are just big Christmas trees with all their ridiculous spending in them. And so under these circumstances, and like you said, I mean, Thomas Massey is one of my best friends, and I just think that we've got to clear it all off. And we have already passed a budget reconciliation bill for next year's budget that would start October 1st. And so we got to clean this out so we can focus on going forward. And so it's not the best circumstances. There's a lot of us that, we don't like CRs, but under these circumstances, we got to help President Trump, that he can have the funds for the border, have the funds for the military. It actually freezes spending. So there's a lot of good arguments to say, hey, passing the CR as it is and moving forward will be good for us to get our work set up for us going forward to start turning things around. But also back to DOGE, they are doing such a great service for Congress because now, we appropriate, we authorize funds, but it's the bureaucracy that actually does the spending on programs. And then we're now finding out how they define a particular program. And so DOGE is doing a great service to America so we can budget better and truly cut spending.
Absolutely. And that's really what the American people want to see. And I hope that with the CR, with the 6 month kind of time frame, that it won't just be then that Congress says, well, we need another 6 months or we need another year, but actually use that time to get some things done. And so let's talk about your legislation that you've introduced, H.R. 1226, the Restoring Checks and Balances Act, which is a great thing just in terms of the title, but requiring and removing power from federal bureaucrats and return it actually to Congress, who should be the only ones who are legislating. And so how overall would this act restore checks and balances and perhaps hopefully have Congress actually control the purse strings and, some of these other issues that really should be determined by Congress?
Yeah, no, this is a bill that even President Trump talked about a little bit in his joint address and the concept of sunsetting regulations. His comment was for every new regulation, 10 need to be removed. And so what mine would actually do would be just sunset every regulation that the executive branch administers or passes, that it would sunset after 5 years, and then it would have to be reauthorized. And so, the American Action Forum, they just did a study on the regulatory cost on the economy and on the country from the Biden administration, and their estimated total cost to the country in regulations is $1.8 trillion. And so, we often think of taxes and fees, and it's like, what's the cost to the American people? Well, I'm a business guy, and so I work in a regulated industry, in the food industry. I really enjoyed listening to your previous guest talking about the MAHA movement, and, we're in poultry and in beef production and agriculture in Indiana. So I love the direction that RFK wants to take our policy related to healthier foods. I mean, it's so critical for us to not only be eating healthier, but it's going to help our healthcare issues. But these regulations are a huge wet blanket on the economy. And so I know that, you know, we can't grow faster. We could grow stronger and healthier as a company, but we have all these regulations that are holding us back. And it's not always even just the regulations, Jenna. It's sometimes it's just the bureaucrats who just don't do anything and they don't give you an answer. I mean, for example, we were trying to do just a simple label for a beef stick product that we produce, and it was like 9 to 12 months just to get good answers for us to be able to put a label on and to be able to sell it to our customers. And so I didn't disagree with the regulation even. I just disagreed that we couldn't get an answer from a bureaucrat in Washington that just held stuff up and sometimes didn't even know what the answer was, and they make it up as they go. So that's why the Checks and Balances Act that I've authored is to sunset every regulation after 5 years, and then it just comes back up for review. And if it's a good regulation, then it can be reinstituted. So that way we don't have this pile of regulations that continue to overlap. And, you know, this agency has this regulation that touches, you know, a particular small business. And then you got another agency that's got another regulation that's affecting the same small business. And it's just becoming too much for the American people. And that's why what Trump is doing where we're going at in Congress is to get the government off of people's back. And this is one way the Checks and Balances Act would do that.
It's amazing. I'm talking to Representative Marlon Stutzman from the great state of Indiana, and this is the Restoring Checks and Balances Act at H.R. 1226 that was introduced. And I think overall, Congressman, that's exactly what the American people want in the Trump mandate, is to reduce the federal government overall. And it's kind of hard, I think, to get the federal government to say, you know, hey, yeah, we're too big and let's reduce our own size down. But that's exactly what we want from conservative members of Congress. And so Trump has also talked about the federal income tax and reducing or even eliminating that altogether. Ultimately, that would need to go through Congress. And what's your view on, you know, reducing something like the income tax, which I think would overnight reduce just the availability of cash flow to Congress to be able to overspend?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of talk about tariffs, and I support the president's efforts in using the tariffs as a tool. I mean, it's incredible to see how effectively he has used tariffs to negotiate to get Canada and Mexico to start supporting us at the borders and stop the drug trafficking and the human trafficking and the sex trafficking that's we all know is going on at the border. And they're, you know, paying people to come to the United States to effectively push America as a country politically into the arms of the Democrat Party. That's what the Democrats think that's happening. They're going to bring in all these illegals that will eventually vote, and they'll vote for them so that way they can control the country for years and years to come. And the American people are seeing right through it, and they're like, no. And that's why President Trump has this strong mandate. But that's where President Trump is using these tariffs to protect America and say, look, we're not going to just let people keep taking advantage of us. And it's happening on currency manipulation. China is really good at that. Our family's also in the manufacturing space, and we see that, you know, whether it's on steel products that we buy or raw products that we use to manufacture our goods and products, aluminum, brass, other metals. We are competing with China, and they beat us every time. Now, there's some spaces that we have a competitive advantage when it gets to transportation, but China, Turkey, and other nations around the world have these advantages. And so we're actually seeing companies in Indiana seeing a spike in orders because of these tariffs, because companies are saying, hey, you know what, we're going to come to the United States and manufacture products. In fact, Honda even announced that they're going to bring the Honda Civic manufacturing from Mexico back to the United States. And in Indiana, we have a huge Honda plant that they're going to be manufacturing the Honda Civic there because they want to avoid the tariffs. But I think also if it's a leveling the playing field. If you're going to tariff us, you know, if Mexico's got a tariff on us, or if China has a tariff on America, we need to say, well, then we're going to have a reciprocal tariff. And then if you want to be a dollar, we're going to be a dollar. If you want to be $10, we're going to be $10. And eventually, I think what's going to happen is everybody's going to start lowering their tariffs down, and the markets are going to stabilize, and it's going to be better for America. And we don't need I mean, all of this, you know, the federal government spends almost $6.5 trillion a year, and there's so much waste. We know it, and we're learning it through the Doge team. And there's no way that the federal or that the American taxpayer needs to fund a federal government that is so bloated and wasteful. And we clean that up, and the American people want to work. I mean, the unemployment rates are low. There's work to be done, but at the same time, we're working harder for less, and that's what President Trump wants to fix and make America a country where you work, you get a reward, and you can support your family, spend time with your family, and do the things that you want to do and really fulfill the American dream that we all have.
And pursue happiness, perhaps, and actually exercise our freedoms and liberties. Well, Representative Marlon Stetson, really appreciate your comments this morning. It's great having you on the show. Looking forward to having you again soon. And listeners can follow him at Rep. Stetson on X. He's from the great state of Indiana. And all of these things, I mean, if we just focus on what's good for America, I mean, really, these aren't, you know, Republican versus Democrat partisan things. I wish that everybody in Congress, regardless of party, would recognize that these are our founding principles. These are our founding ideals. And this is what and why and how we should be able to exercise our God-given pre-political rights as the founders intended. So we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And speaking of the freedom and liberty to pursue happiness and pursue the American dream, and, you know, some of these Republicans in name only not really getting the message. Well, Texas has a very interesting bill that is being circulated. Dade Phelan, if you remember him and just all of the controversy in Texas, he's introduced a bill that would criminalize political memes. What in the world? Well, this coming from the Texas Scorecard, courts have routinely struck down laws that regulate political discourse based on content, citing the First Amendment's strong protections for satire and parody. And we think of our friends over at the Babylon Bee, but let's welcome in Abraham George, who is the Texas GOP chairman. And Abraham, this seems utterly ridiculous, especially coming from someone in Texas, of all places. I mean, I would think this would be over in, you know, California and Newsom's territory.
Yeah, Jenna, great to be here. Thank you for having me. And you're absolutely right. What we're seeing with this bill is an outright attack on free speech in Texas. House Bill, I believe it is 366, that would criminalize the distribution of altered media, including political memes, especially if they don't carry a government-approved disclaimer. So if this passes, you could face up to like a year in jail for posting a meme about a politician. This is a government overreach at its worst.
And this is ridiculous. And so, I mean, is this specifically attempting to curb behavior that came out of some specific situation in Texas? Or, I mean, this kind of seems like it's arising out of nowhere, especially when, you know, all of the meme crews from all of the Team Trump people. I mean, that's kind of, he's so memeable. That's why, in a large part, he's sort of this pop culture phenomenon. So it would seem like the state of Texas would be all about the memes.
Yeah, so absolutely. So if you ever laughed at like Michael Berry shows, a drunk date, parody calls, or things like that. So Dade Phelan got memed so bad in the last cycle when he was running. There was Club for Growth, I believe, who sent out mailers that he, with Dade Phelan and Nancy Pelosi hugging each other, obviously an AI generated, I think. And it just basically said Dade Phelan and Nancy Pelosi is the same when it comes to governing. And those kind of things, he just probably pissed him off. And then Michael Berry had his show where people will call in parody calls with drunk Dade. He had an incident at the dais that everyone believes he was drunk when he made some decisions. So I think it's just a personal grudge at this point, and this is turning into a law in Texas, and it's assigned to the most powerful committee in state house, the state affairs.
The State Affairs Committee, and this coming from the Texas Scorecard piece, it says we'll take up the bill by the former Speaker of the House, of course, the state rep, Dade Phelan, on Wednesday, along with a slate of energy transmission legislation and other things. So it's the first hearing of the committee on legislation this session. And so this is how he's prioritizing it. And, you know, for people who maybe don't remember outside of Texas, or some of our listeners, I think all our listeners in Texas will be very well aware of the former speaker, the incident that you're describing, that, you know, he was accused of allegedly being drunk, and, you know, it seemed like there was something going on, at least. And all of those memes, of course, were circulated. But then, you know, the involvement, of course, that he had with the Paxton impeachment and some of those things. I mean, rather than saying, don't meme my conduct, maybe the solution, respectfully to him, is to just be better and actually, you know, don't have, you know, these outlandishly ridiculous displays, and don't have policy that, you know, would cause people to meme you hugging Nancy Pelosi. You know, maybe actually get on the conservative side. You know, wouldn't that be a better solution than targeting political advertising?
Yeah, that would be the best solution. And you would think after losing his speakership, he would reevaluate what happened and how do I make actions better, and how can I govern, and how can I serve the people better. Instead of doing that, instead of doing, you know, in the State Affairs Committee is very powerful. Instead of focusing on, like, securing our border, lowering property tax, or, you know, energy grid strengthening in Texas, the most powerful committee in the State House is prioritizing a meme that censors political speech. And it's a favor to him because he was the former speaker. It's just absurd that they will consider this bill along with the energy legislation, which is an unconstitutional attempt on police political discourse.
And I'm speaking with Abraham George, who is the Texas GOP chair. And, you know, you mentioned this is a favor to him kind of as a former speaker. And so does that indicate maybe that even though obviously he's not speaker, he still wields a pretty significant influence in the Texas state legislature? I mean, we know that over the last cycle, there were a lot of these Republicans in name only that had given, you know, speakerships to, or committeeships rather, to Democrats. And, you know, some of them that obviously were involved in the Paxton impeachment, they got primaried. And so this is kind of a new composition in the state house and the legislature there. But does do these Republicans in name only carry and wield still too much influence in Texas?
I would have to say yes. I mean, we, you know, the party, the people, replaced about 15 of those members. Many of them didn't even run. Dade Phelan got challenged, and including President Donald Trump got involved. He won by about 400 votes as a sitting speaker, spending millions of dollars on both sides. So, but at the same time, this cycle, the idea of a speaker's race is you get elected by the Republican caucus. That's not what happened this time. We had a Republican nominee. The Republican caucus got together and selected a nominee. Unfortunately, he didn't win. Dade Phelan's crew had another candidate, Dustin Brose, who is the speaker now. He, just like in the past, they joined Democrats. A good amount of Republicans joined the most of the Democrats and elected Dade Phelan as the speaker. So we have 88 members in the House, which is a really good majority out of the 150. But unfortunately, the 88 didn't stick together because they want to, that includes Dade Phelan and, you know, a bunch of people who are more left-leaning Republicans. And they went with about 50-some Democrats to elect a speaker who is now beholden to the Democrat Party a lot more than they are beholden to the Republicans in Texas. Wow. So, yeah, they're still in power.
Well, this is an opportunity for our Texas listeners to call your representatives, tell them what you think. And Abraham George, always great talking with you. You can follow him on X at Abraham George, chairman of the Republican Party of Texas. You can read about this in the Texas Scorecard. And notably, a Fort Worth attorney who specializes in First Amendment litigation said, "It's amazing this ridiculous bill is the top priority of the Texas House's most powerful committee. The bill is obviously unconstitutional. It would criminalize protected speech on the basis of its content. As my dad would say, what a maroon." You can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.